Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today with Joe Rexrode and Michelle Knezovic. Hope you're having a great start to your Thursday. Excited about this. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, senior NFL writer for them, is going to join Robbie and Rexrode every Thursday at 8 o'clock. He's presented by the NFL Alumni Association. So we say hello to Charles right now. Charles, how you doing?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. Good to have you here with us. I know, Joe, you're excited. You've known Charles a long time, so this is going to be cool to have him on every week.
Absolutely.
Go Sparty.
Go Sparty. So let's start
good
with...
Good to have another one in the house, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we got Derek Mason here. We got Joe, so...
Taking over the station, basically.
I know.
It's like a family reunion. That's what it feels like.
Hey, you can tune in Sunday. I think it's this Sunday. I'm running some of their games, or it's next Sunday. It is this Sunday. Yeah, Michigan State running some games.
Michigan State, Indiana.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
I did that just for you.
You did that for D-Mace.
No, I did that. I did that for you. You're the basketball guy.
You did it for Izzo.
And then next week, Michigan State, Purdue. So there you go. We are your Michigan State.
I love
State
it.
Station.
Yes, we are.
Go green, go white.
Great. Look at
this. So Charles, let's start with the Tennessee Titans. They have made it official. They have hired Rand Carthon as their new general manager. And, you know, something Joe and I have discussed, I was of the belief that they may stay internal with Ryan Cowden, who had been here, had the interim tag. They interviewed him. Monty Ossenfort ends up leaving, going to Arizona. But what was kind of your thought when you got the news that Rand Carthon would be the new general manager of the Titans?
Well, I think the really interesting thing is when you talk to people about Rand, the first thing they talk about is just, well, really two things. Number one, a really big connector with not only the people around him and the people he might be managing, but also with players. And then secondly, just how it seems like everywhere he's been, in particular during the run in San Francisco, he had this way of making everybody feel really included in whatever the process was. And the reason why, you know, the light bulb kind of goes off for me in this situation, in this hire, is I think ownership. That's what they were looking for. They wanted a level of inclusivity with the general manager, and also, you know, I know the comments are out there from John Lynch, but this idea that you're going to kind of go through it as they, you know, as the Titans try to revamp the roster, probably upgrade update the offense a little bit, lean it more into the passing game. And, you know, it's not going to be an easy process. And you got to have general manager and coach that are there, tied together, loyal to each other, which is very similar to San Francisco. I mean, it was the difficulty that San Francisco went through overturning that roster from 2017 to today, which was immense. It was insane. I mean, I can literally remember the first three off seasons going there, and you watch them wipe out an entire roster and recreate it into a Super Bowl caliber team. There was some strain, you know, at times on the organization, and Shanahan and, you know, John Lynch really had to be a unit. And there were times where people were talking about, well, they're at odds. And every time I'd be in that building, they'd be like, yeah, that's just garbage. Like, we're always going to have each other's back. And Rand was someone that, you know, when you talk to John Lynch about it, he's like, that's who this guy is. He's going to be there. He's going to support Mike Vrabel. It's a great fit for Mike Vrabel. I talked to a general manager yesterday who said, I think he's like a football traditionalist. I'm like, what does that mean? He was like, well, he's going to fit well with Vrabel because look at how San Francisco built their roster. You know, complementary football, very strong defense. You know, look at the level of, you know, toughness in the players. That it reminds me a lot of the things that Mike Vrabel is really interested in. But I just think that thing where he just seems to connect with everybody that he's around is really going to be a big deal. And, of course, he's got, like, a super high-level beard.
Yeah, tremendous beard, no doubt about that. Well, so that's interesting, Charles, and you talk about the collaboration. That's the word that they've used a lot around here. And, of course, tomorrow they're going to introduce Rand Carthon, and the question is going to come, okay, so who has final say, right? First of all, do you have a spreadsheet somewhere where you know across the league, like coach or GM has final say? And second of all, how much does that matter? Like, how – obviously, we know about some of the power struggles at different spots, you know.
Right.
You know what happened, like, in Houston with Bill O'Brien, right? But, like, how much does that matter?
I think it matters. It's funny because it always seems to matter when things unravel between a tandem. Okay, I'll give you a good example. In Atlanta, when Dan Quinn was there and he was the head coach and Thomas Dimitroff was the GM, over time, eventually the 53 shifted into Dan's hands. And I think that there became a little bit of a rift. Like, I don't want to say a rift, but like anytime he gets transferred from a general manager who holds the 53 to the coach then holding the 53, there's some awkwardness in the building. And it's funny because it's one of those things where you're always trying to figure out who exactly has it. Organizations go to great pains to not answer that question. I'm very curious. I can't answer that now other than to say I've never seen a head coach survive a general manager ousting and not pick up more influence over the 53 or hold full influence over the 53. So, and this is just an assumption on my part, Mike being the one who's, you know, I guess if you want to say made it through the transition or whatever, I would be surprised if Mike does not have significant influence over the 53. And let's go back to the 49ers model. Technically Lynch has the 53, but here's the thing. I've never heard anything other than everything that they go and get, the players they select, how they handle this. It's what Kyle wants. There's not a player on that roster. If Kyle doesn't want a player on the roster, the player's not going to be on the roster. They're not going to get somebody that Kyle doesn't want. Ultimately, you know, they lean into his final say, and I'm kind of like, well, that feels like he has a 53. I'm like, well, you know, we don't really want to describe exactly. It's just, I don't know. I think it's because it becomes battleground over, you know, two individuals when things start to go wrong. So I'll be interested to see how that question gets answered on Friday. That's, to me, anytime a general manager comes in, that's one of the more important or sort of interesting questions, is just seeing how they navigate it. My guess is there will be a little bit of a tap dance because that's how it works nowadays.
Yeah, I expect the same thing. But, I mean, because, look, my understanding is like McVay, Carroll. It seems like basically if you get to a certain level of achievement, and like you said, certainly if you survive a firing and you have a new one coming, that as a head coach, you should at least expect the 53, right?
Yeah, I mean, you should have significant influence over the 53, right? I think when there's a situation where a general manager hire is being made, the coach has influence in that process. You go to get a general manager that's going to fit and work with a head coach. And so, yeah, you're not going to tell your head coach, hey, we're going to get a general manager. They're going to have the 53. You're not. I mean, then, the coach is going to sit there and go, okay, well, I feel like the clock's ticking on me then. You just feel like you're less of the process. And you brought up the Rams. I'll give you a good example with the Rams. I mean, there's literally Les is someone who supposedly controls the 53, but when you talk to Les, like, he will always tell you, there's nobody we go out and get that Sean, you know, we go and get the player Sean wants. That's how this works. So it's supposed to be this shared thing. But I've also heard stories where it's like, okay, it came down to Sean wanting a certain player. Les might have wanted another player, but he ended up choosing the player Sean ultimately wanted. I know, you know, like one specific player in particular. And those are the stories about the 53 that you hear in the background. That's why it becomes important, is when coach wants X, general manager wants Y, which way does the organization ultimately go? And then, depending on how that pick pans out later, do you hear about it? Like, is it like, oh, they took this player, didn't work out? Well, that was really Sean's pick versus Les's pick. And it's just, you know, it's an element of drama that can unfold down the line. But let's be real here. Ran is being brought in to work with Mike. I think that I would expect that there's going to be, again, a very similar setup to what's going on in San Francisco. The way that Mike wants to build it, the kind of character and types of guys that Mike wants is, are going to be the type of players that Ran leans into. And again, the people who know Ran say that he's a really good fit with Mike Vrabel. So maybe it's a little less relevant other than, you know, Mike having survived this and expecting that he's going to have a lot of influence.
He's Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, going to join Robbie and Rexford every week or every Thursday at 8 o'clock. We'll have more with Charles coming up next, including getting into this roster and the work that Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel will have to do. Charles presented by the NFL Alumni Association. But first, Joe, you have a word on FanDuel.
Yes, NFL playoffs heating up. FanDuel, every play is a rush. New customers join today so you can bet the division around. $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place a first $5 bet. All you got to do is sign up promo code Joe102. If I was looking at one thing this week, I do like the Chiefs a lot. I really think, you know, great story with the Jags. I think the Chiefs are primed to make another run here. Do whatever you want. Just do it on America's number one sports book. Got all your favorite bets, money line, point spreads, player props, but you can also combine them for a bigger payout with the same game parlay. This is all on an app that's safe, secure, and very important, super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet. Get $150 in free bets, win or lose. Promo code Joe102. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner in the NFL. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online women wager only $10. First deposit required. Bonus issued is now a double free bets. Expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook@fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line 800-889-9789.
Robbie and Rex Road, Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today with Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic. Talking to Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. Talking NFL and the Titans with him. He's presented by the NFL Alumni Association. Charles, as Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel begin their roster evaluation, you know, one thing that we've all discussed is who's going to be under center for them next year. Are they going to stick with Ryan Tannehill? Are they going to blow it up and go with Malik Willis or draft or what have you? Are they going to bring in somebody else? Obviously, people are going, well, San Francisco's got three quarterbacks. I could bring one of them here. What do you think? Who do you think is the quarterback for the Titans next year?
Well, I think first you got to figure out, you know, let's see what happens with the OC position. You know, I think when you look at, what's interesting to me is the three prominent external names, they're all kind of, they're sort of the same candidates, but they're also kind of different. So like when you sit there and let's talk about like say Matt Nagy, right? He's got experience, got a lot of in-game experience. People know his track record. Obviously there was the Bears experience. So you can see what he's done with different styles of quarterbacks, Mitchell Trubisky. You know, you talk to people in the Chiefs organization, they will rave about what he did for Alex Smith. And so you kind of can see how he handles and develops different kinds of quarterbacks. Or so I guess, you know, there are elements of Alex's game and even Mitchell Trubisky that were slightly the same. But, you know, Eric Bieniemy, another guy who's got in-game experience, has been there for obviously the Patrick Mahomes, you know, rise. And there's always that question of like how much of the offense is his versus Andy's. But you know, kind of an authoritarian, can be pretty gruff at times with players, but you know, is somebody that is very respected there. And then when you talk about Charles London, I think it's interesting, you know, clearly to me, I'm like, all right, this, I can see what's happening here with Charles London between Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith. It's sort of, you know, someone that ends up on Arthur Smith's staff, you know, partially from working with Mike and what that recommendation is, and then, you know, having familiarity with how Arthur Smith calls an offense and you know, Mike having experience with Charles London when they were together in Houston. So you can sort of see how the candidates have all sort of surfaced. And then obviously you have the internal candidates, you know, Tim Kelly, having that experience inside and how OCs are groomed by a lot of teams are internal hires, and that's what Mike has done in the past. So I think before you get to quarterback, you just have to figure out what are you embracing with the next OC hire, and then, you know, how do you move forward with it? I still think that Ryan Tannehill makes sense for a return in 2023, you know, potentially on a reworked salary in that time frame. If that doesn't happen, and I would have to think that he knows, he looks out there and he sees what's going on with quarterbacks and free agency or availability, there's a lot of veteran guys, a lot of bridge guys that are potentially going to be available out there. And, you know, I think if Ryan Tannehill wants to go and be, you know, in that soup, it's going to be difficult. You know, there's a lot of guys right now sitting there going, I just don't know how many starting jobs are necessarily available for me. And, you know, he's going to have to wait to see how other individuals sort out before he would land a job. So I still think that there's a solid chance that he returns, but I would have to think that the money would probably be reworked for that to happen.
Well, kind of on the same two situations that I guess would be adjacent to this potentially.
Good word.
Thank you. I'd love to get I need your actual firm prediction, Charles. Where the heck is Tom Brady going to be next year? Because, of course, we're talking about him in this town again. And also,
Right. Let's
say Brock Purdy, because I don't know what – I'd love your thought on this, too. I feel like, yes, San Francisco has arguably the best roster. Yes, Kyle Shanahan, he's a wizard. It's just so fun to watch their offense. But also, I think Brock Purdy's pretty freaking good from what I can tell. So what if he goes through and wins the Super Bowl and they're like, well, here we go. We found Mr. Relevant as our QB. Or is it possible that Rand Carthon, who, of course, was a part of a massive investment to get Trey Lance, would think about Trey Lance joining him here?
Well, obviously, we've seen the social media posts by Trey Lance. Everybody's, you know, that raised the eyebrows and you know, you want to read into emojis nowadays and figure out what exactly that means, you know, that, hey, Trey Lance is – got his fingers crossed that maybe Rand Carthon comes and gets him. Here's the thing. It's hard to know exactly what the answer is until we see ultimately how this finishes out for San Francisco and Brock Purdy, because I truly believe all it's going to take is one bad game from Brock Purdy and, you know, people, the shine's going to come off this pretty quickly. Now, the opener, technically, I think if you go back and really look at Brock Purdy's games, his first playoff game, technically you could be like, well, that was his bad game. It wasn't a horrible game. I mean, ball location could have been better at times. If you're doing box score scouting, it looks like he killed it. But I think what's interesting and what Trey Lance should be worried about is how players around him are responding. And I don't want to bring Brady into this, you know, and how he started with the Patriots, but I will say the one similarity that's interesting when you talk to people in San Francisco is that when Brady took over as a starter in New England, how players responded around him and the confidence they had in him, that really played a big part in Bill Belichick sticking with him when Drew Bledsoe was once again healthy. And I think you're kind of seeing that with Brock Purdy and the way players are responding around. Yes, the roster is amazing, but there's just this level of confidence that people have in him that is, it's kind of jaw-dropping right now. And it's wild. It's just this crazy story that's come together the way that it has. And I think if he leads them, you know, to the Super Bowl, or, you know, they win a Super Bowl with Brock Purdy, I don't know how you couldn't sit there and potentially shift away from him and at the very least go, okay, let's see if there's a market out there for Trey Lance. And you know, what are our options there on the table? I think if Trey Lance were to get dealt, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that Rand Carthon, you know, is someone that would look into dealing for him. Think about the Rams, right? Brad Holmes gets the job in Detroit. That helped put together the Matt Stafford trade. It helped bring in Jared Goff. And when Detroit traded for Jared Goff, I was kind of like, man, this is sort of the damaged asset. You're bringing on toxic real estate here. You're getting draft picks in tow because of that fact. But when you talk to like Brad Holmes, like, no, he's like, this dude can ball. Like, just wait, you'll see. And look at what we're looking at now. Like, we're like, oh, wow, there was a lot there to still like. And I'm sure Rand Carthon probably feels that way about Trey Lance. So to answer, you know, the long-winded answer in terms of like Ran and Trey Lance, yeah, it makes sense if Trey Lance becomes available that, you know, the Titans would be near the top of the list because of who they just hired as a general manager. But again, let's wait and see how things hash out in San Francisco. In terms of Brady, here's the only thing I can tell you with Brady. For a month, all I've heard is there's no way he's staying in Tampa if Byron Leftwich is still calling plays as the offensive coordinator. There would have to be some pretty significant changes on offense and the coaching staff for him to return. I had heard they were going to fire him. I had heard after the playoff loss they were going to fire him. I expected the morning after it was going to be announced they fired him. And then Todd Bowles came out and said, no decisions have been made yet, which is surprising to me, and it makes me wonder if Tampa already knows that Tom's sort of like, yeah, I'm moving on. So, you know, and they're sitting there saying, well, we don't have to fire Byron. If Tom's leaving anyway, we don't necessarily have to fire Byron. I don't know. The Raiders, to me, make sense in terms of the comfort level between Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady. I can't tell you where Tom's going to end up. I don't think anybody can tell you where Tom's going to end up right now. But, yeah, I think he's probably number one in terms of, like, how do we figure out the quarterback shuffle. I would say Aaron Rodgers is still someone that, given what he said recently with Pat McAfee, sounds like he's a guy who still wants to play. He just doesn't want to stay in Green Bay if they have massive veteran roster changes there on offense, which they could. So it's weird. We're still kind of waiting on these old guys to sort out the quarterback market, but that's what we're waiting for. And, you know, Lamar Jackson, let's listen to John Harbaugh today and Eric DaCosta. We're going to find out probably a little bit more about what's going on with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, because that's another guy. If he becomes available, who knows what's going to happen with the quarterback market if suddenly Lamar Jackson becomes a tradable commodity. It's nuts. Like, I 2 years ago, I talked to Sean, or it was after Stafford got traded and Brady went to Tampa. I talked to Sean Payton, and I was like, this is insane. Like, this is this quarterback migration. Jared Goff gets traded. I'm like, I've never seen anything like this. This is like a whole new world in the NFL. And Sean was like, it's one off season. He's like, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see whether this is a trend. I think it's a trend. Like, I really do. I think now it's been a couple years in a row here where we've kind of had this happen. And I think, like, as active as the NFL general managers are at the deadline, they're just as active now with quarterbacks and being willing to move these guys around. And I also think the quarterbacks know that they have the leverage to push to be moved to.
Charles, great stuff. Appreciate it. Going to look forward to listening to this. Robbie will be back next week with Joe, but going to be fun to have you on every week. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited. Thanks for having me on, guys. And, you know, hopefully we will have some answers tomorrow to, you know, where the direction of everything's going. But I think I think fans are going to be really, they're going to enjoy Rand Carthon once they, you know, have a chance to get to know him a little bit. And he is definitely, to me, a win the press conference guy, which is always an important first step. So I think people will see that tomorrow.
No doubt. Charles Robinson, thanks, buddy. Yahoo Sports. Thanks so much. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, Phil.
He is presented by the NFL Alumni Association. So much to unpack there with Charles Robinson. That's why we have him on for 30 minutes, which is fantastic. We will do that coming up next here on Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game.
The quarterback market if suddenly Lamar Jackson becomes a tradable commodity. It's nuts. Like, I 2 years ago, I talked to Sean, or it was after Stafford got traded and Brady went to Tampa. I talked to Sean Payton, and I was like, this is insane. Like, this is this quarterback migration. Jared Goff gets traded. I'm like, I've never seen anything like this. This is like a whole new world in the NFL. And Sean was like, it's one off season. He's like, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see whether this is a trend. I think it's a trend. Like, I really do. I think now it's been a couple years in a row here where we've kind of had this happen. And I think, like, as active as the NFL general managers are at the deadline, they're just as active now with quarterbacks and being willing to move these guys around. And I also think the quarterbacks know that they have the leverage to push to be moved to.
That's Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, senior NFL writer, going to join Robbie and Rex Road every Thursday at 8. Back here on Robbie and Rex Road, Chase McCabe in for Robbie today. Chase and Michelle coming up in about 27 minutes, to be precise. Looking forward to continuing some of the things we've discussed this morning. But I think it's interesting what he brought up with the quarterback market, because, I mean, we have seen it be active. I mean, there were times – I'll always remember when Floyd would say things like, you know, if a guy is available, then there's a reason for that. Now I think it's just – it's the money, which is – it's the league's own fault. It's these GM's faults. It's the owner's fault. They've paid out the money. But they get to a point where it's like, all right, we don't want to pay it anymore. And the way that you can manipulate the cap, you see some of this movement. But, like, I look at San Francisco. They're in a fantastic position. They got three guys that, at least right now, it appear they could start for a team. So that's capital for them that they can use. But I think it's going to be nuts. I don't think John Harbaugh and Eric DeCosta are going to say anything too profound other than Lamar's our quarterback. We want Lamar to be our quarterback for many, many years to come and all the stuff you would expect them to say. I don't think we're going to learn much, but could he really be on the move? I don't think so, but you never know.
No, I think it's possible. And, yeah, it certainly has changed. There's no doubt about it. And, look, I would even go back to – I mean, go back to Le'Veon Bell, who didn't help himself. He bet on himself, didn't help himself. But that kind of – that was one of the early – you know what? Kind of realizations that the players do have more leverage. And, like, with Lamar Jackson, if he's out on them, and yes, they can tag him. But I don't think he'll play. And then he'll and then he'll have to have a year. I mean, we saw what happened with Deshaun Watson. Before all his crap happened, we saw what happened when he wanted out of Houston, right? Got, you know, I'll sit a year now. I'll sit a year. Okay. And then, you know, eventually I'm going to get my way. So, so it just helps the NFL dominate the news cycle even more than it does in the offseason, because it's this fascinating soap opera now, these quarterback movement.
And on that, though, like, guys sitting out a year, personal trainers are, you know, used to be like, oh, yeah, I mean, the NFL, that's the best trainers in the world. You know, you can't you can't beat that. Well, now all these guys have trainers that are just as good as what they're going to get at an NFL facility. And so if they're like, look, I'll practice and stay in shape on my own, sit out a year, and then go do what I want to do. I think owners and GMs and coaches and everybody are becoming more aware of that. And I'm also curious, as we go along, does the franchise tag eventually go away? I hate the franchise tag. I understand why it's there, but I hate it. Like, I've just, you know, if it's like adding a year, but you're way overpaying because of the averages, you know, at least for some positions. Eventually I could see the owners and the GMs going, this isn't working the way that we wanted it to anymore. And so it goes away. I mean, if you're a player and you get tagged, I mean, it, you know, you're gonna make money.
Yeah,
I mean,
but you're off. Good. But it also can, you know, obviously prevent you from a big long term deal, and then you get hurt in that year, right? I mean, there's still a player. I mean, most players don't.
So there's kind of a catch-22 with both, you know, both sides of it.
Yeah. When is the next CBA? I mean, we're talking a while from now, like early 30s, right? So it'll be a while. But yeah, I could see that possibly. I think the difference with quarterbacks too is that, like, with a lot of, you know, look, it's a not for long is a real thing, and at most positions, I mean, certainly like at running back, but really, at most positions, like, that year is important, right? I mean, quarterback longevity now has also been extended. And maybe Brady exaggerates that because everybody's not doing what he did. But still, I feel like quarterbacks now, you look at a quarterback like Tannehill's, what, 34? And 34 used to be like, oh, aging quarterback, I don't know. Now it's like, oh, he's got some good years left, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a little more, you got a little more leeway if you're a quarterback in terms of being able to, you know, like, you're going to have a longer career. I mean, if you're good. So, but yeah, there's a lot to unpack from Charles there. I thought he had some really, really strong words there on like the Rand Carthon and the whole, just the way this is going to work with Vrabel. And I think that's it. It's like very interesting to think about the Shanahan 49ers thing, because I've wondered about that. I hadn't really heard like Shanahan has final say, but it's like, how could he not at this point have a stronger voice in it? And that sounds like an actual collaboration, right? Yeah. So it is. It's like, if things are going well, that's what it'll be, right? I mean, it's like, you know, you can have back and forth and maybe you get this guy, you get this guy, whatever it is, but it's going well. When it goes poorly is when it's like, who made that mistake?
Right. Who are you going
to
blame?
And we all clearly knew who to blame when they traded A.J. Brown.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've always wondered with the 49ers is, you know, like you look at Rand Carthon, he's gone on the career path to be a general manager. He has been in front offices. He's been on the player evaluation side, personnel side. John Lynch is a former player, a Hall of Fame player, and a TV guy. So he didn't have that, you know, it was, I think we all had the same reaction when they hired him. Like, what are they doing? You know, they're hiring John Lynch.
Well, as soon as it happened, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen this before with Matt Millen in Detroit.
Yeah.
That's what happened. He was a great TV analyst. They loved him, and they brought him in, and he was obviously
terrible GM.
A just disaster of a GM. Yeah.
Yeah, but clearly John Lynch has surrounded himself with the right people, like Rand Carthon. And then you wonder, okay, how much say does Shanahan have? Because Shanahan grew up in that because his dad – had final say, you know, for a long time in Denver and then in Washington. So I think that is a really interesting dynamic, and it's worked out for John Lynch because he looks like a genius. But how much has he actually, you know, how much say has he really had?
Yeah, well, and look, and that's the thing. I mean, like, so Jeff Saturday, we all make our jokes, and, I mean, it didn't go well, right, for Jeff Saturday. And it is – absolutely an affront to anyone who grinds in the coaching profession and then they watch this guy come from TV and get a head coaching opportunity, right? But at the same time, do I believe that, like, a Jeff Saturday couldn't work out? No. I mean, you played the game. You've been around the game. You know people. If you're smart and you're a good person and you can work with people and that stuff, I mean, it can work out. So I feel like John Lynch is a smart guy. And also, I think that you hit on a huge part of this is that having Shanahan there, he had someone who absolutely knows what he wants. Kyle Shanahan is a guy who he's a step ahead of a lot of people in this league. So that's a partnership. And then, like you said, you have to have a good staff and everything. But I think John Lynch deserves a lot of credit for it still. And it, it's, you know, it's if you're surrounded with the right people and people who actually can work together, then you can have success.
Well, and what you're going to learn, too, is, you know, as they have more success, more people are going to leave in elevated positions like Rand Carthon, and you're going to learn, okay, was it those people that contributed to the success? Was it John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan? Can they replace those people? And vice versa, with Rand Carthon, you know, you'll learn, okay, can he sit in the big chair? You know, and that's going to take time. I mean, it's just like, you know, with John Robinson. Now, I believe John Robinson is going to be a GM again. I do believe that.
I would think so.
You know, it probably won't be this year, but I do believe that he will at some point.
There's no other openings now, right?
Yeah. I mean, I thought the Colts would be open and that would be a total Ursay move, but maybe the Colts open next year, you know, and then that's an Ursay move. I mean, John could go back to New England. He could take a year off, you know, whatever, go to Tampa. So, I mean, there's options for him, but I just think that's the fun part of all this of, okay, is it really a collaboration or is one person just that good? And that's why there's all that success. I mean, I think San Francisco is a prime example of what a collaboration should be.
Yeah, and again, the late round, all that stuff, that is what really makes a Rand Carthon and Adam Peters attractive to people, because that's where they're really supposed to, without really parsing it and saying, this is your pick, this is your pick, it's as close as you can get. Like, that's where they, you know, have stood out. Now, the Niners have made the mistakes high in the draft. That's the thing about Trey Lance, too. 3 first-round picks. So you invested so much in him being the future of your franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you turn right around and dealt him, you're not getting three first round picks. So you're a diminishing asset at that point. That's why I still have my doubts about that happening. And like Charles said, oh, like one bad half from Brock Purdy will be like, wow, what a great story. Okay, yeah. Thank you. We're so happy to have you as our backup quarterback.
The thing with Lance, though, is, I mean, do you even like, if I'm them, I don't make the move unless I get a first-round pick for him. But if I'm another team, I don't give up a first-round pick for him because the dude's been hurt for 2 years. So you're kind of stuck. I don't even know why we're having this conversation with him.
Well, but again, that's three that they gave up to get him. Yeah, you'll give – like, Titans giving up 11 for him. The thing is, you have the insight of Rand Carthon, who's going to tell you, might be like, I'm telling you, this guy he's going to be great.
And that's the only way I would even consider doing it.
Right.
But if, like,
but it makes it an interesting dynamic in this situation.
Yeah. But if I'm another team, you know, because, I mean, Rand Carthon could come in here and tell Vrabel and everybody, hey, look, the kid's hurt. Like, he's not going to bounce back from it.
Right. So, or, yeah, he's just too injury prone, or he just wasn't what we thought he was, whatever.
Could be that too. So, I mean, I don't know, but that's certainly going to be interesting. It is time for Preds Pick to Click, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty and Superbook Sports. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025, and you can participate in Preds Pick to Click. We will do that coming up next here on Robbie and Rex Road. Chase in for Robbie today, 1025, 1063, The Game. Ah, yes, it is that time. Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today, alongside Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic. A chance to win Predators tickets. Preds in action tonight against St. Louis. I'll have pregame for you at 6, and joined by the voice of the Preds, Pete Weber, Max Herz, Hal Gill, will be on the call. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bring in Billy, who is going to be making his selection. Billy, welcome in.
Hey, good morning, Chase. How are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. Good. Who is your Preds pick to click?
I'm going to go with Philip Forsberg.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Billy. Good luck. Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. Go Preds.
Very disappointing, Billy.
You just said, like, I hope the listener doesn't take Philip Forsberg, and he did.
When I'm first, I need the listener to go Cole Smith, Colton Sissons, you know, leave me the full menu.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, we've had. Did I take Cole Smith once? I think I did. We've definitely had
Robbie
some Sissons.
Did.
Yeah. But well, okay. No, he took Forsberg, and now I am up.
Yeah, I like this music, by the way.
I do too. This is a lot better than Glorious Domination. Good bass.
Yeah, anything with a bass lick like that, like I'm all about.
Yeah. Okay. At St. Louis. You know what? I mean, is this a total squandering of being first? It might be. But I'm telling you all right now, that happens tonight. Tanner Jeannot is going to score a freaking goal.
There it is.
Tanner Jeannot is my pick. And when it happens, I will bring it
up
a lot tomorrow.
I'm going to say this, and I'm sure Michelle and Robbie would not agree with this. If that hits, you should get 2 points.
I agree. Thank you. You run the place.
That's true, I can make this happen.
Chase actually isn't in the competition.
No, but he makes a good point.
But I could overrule everybody. And make
I veto it because I'm in last right now.
Chase has final say on Preds Pick to Click. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Are you up?
I am up. I'm gonna go with Ryan Johansson tonight. I think he gets back on the board. So give me Joey tonight.
Wow.
You've got a lot of possibilities here for you, because we have
Tanner Jeannot and Ryan Johansson off the board. Well, this is good because who I wanted is still there. So I am going to go with Nino Niederreiter.
Uh-huh. He's been circling. He's been circling around that net.
He's doing exactly what I think they were hoping he would do.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, now he went on a tear to start the season, and it's like, oh, here we go, 30 goals. But, I mean, I would think he gets to 20 or above 20, which is – you need those guys.
What you signed up for.
Yep. But 23 points in 44 games, that's not bad at all. He's the kind of player that you wanted. I mean, he was He was never going to come in here and be a superstar. You didn't need him to be. He's a good role player.
Yeah. That's the thing is, like, I think he's been what they thought they were getting. And with McDonough, obviously you had the struggles and the shuffling and all that early, but I feel like he's getting there, they've wanted too, or he's getting close to it. And so then you look at – and then you have Saros playing at Vezina level. And so eventually it kind of comes back around to, well, the people who get picked at the top of this – well, Matt Duchene wasn't picked today.
No.
Like, he should be picked every day along with Forsberg because those guys should be scoring more.
Yeah, I think I agree. And then a guy that I'm curious slash starting to get a little concerned about is Mikhail Granlin. I think you got to get more out of Mikhail Granlin. And he was on Chase and Michelle yesterday, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that just it's been very up and down for him for whatever reason. I mean, last year he was Granny Apples. That's what he was. You know, he's not really a goal scorer, but
no,
25 points, only 21 assists so far this year.
Right, when they put him down the middle and everything, he was really – it seemed like, especially he was a guy who immediately benefited from the Laviolette to Hines switch.
Yeah.
He's played a lot of good hockey, but, yeah, I agree. He just has not been as impactful as they need him to be.
The one thing with the Predators that, I mean, we've seen a lot, and I feel like I know John Hines enough that I could ask him this and, ask him to kind of explain his thought process, but I do wonder if there needs to be a little bit more of, okay, these are the lines, let's let it marinate for a little bit. Because he does change it a lot. And it's like you're trying to find that perfect combination. Now, Peter Laviolette did that too. Peter Laviolette was more in-game, but he did a lot of shuffling on the lines.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
coaches do that. Yeah, some more than others.
You got to play to matchups, but you also got to build some chemistry within the lines. I mean, that's why we saw such a lot of success out of Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson, when they played together for a long time. The herd, we've seen a lot out of them. But it's just, it's a chess match of trying to find the perfect combination every night, and that's hard to do in this league.
It's really interesting with you bringing up the herd line, how that has just really become – not a consideration anymore when it was so central to what they were last year.
He put them back together in a game, like in the middle of a game recently, but it wasn't very
long. A few shifts.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just interesting when that happens, when it's like you have this line, like, as long as these guys are on the team, like they absolutely belong together. Peanut butter, jelly, and I guess bread, right?
Who's what?
That's a good question. I guess Sissons would be the bread.
Sissons is the bread. I would agree with that.
The jam would have to be Janot.
Yeah.
And then
the peanut butter is
Yakov. Sorry, Yakov. You get to be the peanut butter.
Yeah.
Smooth, though, not crunchy.
Yeah.
Although they were kind of crunchy as a line. My God, I've taken this way too far. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, it's time for you to go. No.
It's time. All right, it's time for you guys to take over the station. There we go. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Oh, yeah. It's been fun hanging out. Hopefully Robbie's back in the fold tomorrow. But that will do it for this portion of mine and Michelle's day. But stick around. We're next. Joe, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll see what Rand Carthon has to say in his opening press conference. So looking forward
for
to that. For Joe Rexford, Michelle Knezvik, I'm Chase McCabe. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.